From talk to music, from Johannesburg to Israel, from sport to business, this is 101.9 High FM.
And good evening, this is Stan Claff from the Hebrew Order of David International, coming to you on Thursday, 3 days before Tu B'Shvat, and we are going to jump right into a topic which very much concerns the Hebrew Order of David as an international organization. One of the main components of being a member, one of the main rules of being a member of the Hebrew Order of David is that you need to be married to a Jewess if you are married, and if you intend to get married, that you will be marrying a Jewess. And so we are in a situation where we are working hard against assimilation. It's one of the cornerstones of our, of the Hebrew Order of David. I have in the studio with me tonight, Rabbi Gedalia Kaufman from Aisha Torah, the rabbi from Aisha, one of the rabbonim from Aisha Torah, and I have also with me Ian Ralph, who's the president of the Governing Lodge of South Africa. We'll be getting to him later, and also a little later we'll be crossing to Atlanta to talk to David Joss, the president of the Governing Lodge of North America, which incorporates lodges in America and in Canada. So we're going to get to the subject of assimilation. We invited Rabbi Kaufman to come here to talk to us, and just I wanted to set the tone of what I want to talk about and what how the discussion would go. And this is a background. Alan Dershowitz said that the solution to the Jewish question also requires the creation of yet another Jewish state, a new Jewish state of mind. We have learned painfully and with difficulty how to fight others. Can we develop Jewish techniques for defending against our own success? What he's really saying is that we've got better and better at fighting the enemy outside, but within we have our own enemy. And as Pogo, the comic strip, Mort Kelly said when he drew pictures of this Pogo, and Pogo says, we have met the enemy and he is us. Rabbi Gedalia Kaufman from Aisha Torah, I've looked at your YouTube presentations of how to do various things, how to hang up a mezuzah, how to do all sorts of things along those lines. But the one that fascinates me is how to argue like a Jew. And I guess that might set the tone of the evening. But in view of the fact that we as an organization have stood against assimilation and intermarriage, we want to know really, we know we're always having this argument with people who want to join or maybe not Jewish, or people who are joined and their families or members of their family want to join as, and but they're not married in the faith. And we've stood steadfast against this since 1904, since our inception, and we continue doing it. But I'd like to hear a rabbinic point of view of what this means and how we as an organization and as Jews can fight within, the enemy within, because somebody once told me that more Jews have been lost to assimilation than were lost in the Holocaust. That's a frightening statistic. Rabbi?
So I think that, first of all, it's very commendable that the Hebrew Order of David takes such an interest, and that they, you know, are trying to take a stand and to make a statement and to fight the fight. But of course, it isn't simply a Hebrew Order of David policy. This is a Jewish people policy. That, you know, one of the most important aspects of Jewish continuity is raising Jews, whether it be our children or raising ourselves, teaching ourselves the importance of what it means to be Jewish, to have a Jewish identity, and to be able to maintain that Jewish identity in a world which is a very much a non-Jewish world. And of course, this is one of the biggest issues which is facing the Jewish people today, is that we're in a situation, this is perhaps for the first time in history, where we have an overwhelming majority of the Jewish people who forget about the fact that aren't religious, is they don't know the first thing about what it means to be a Jew. They don't, talking about things that they don't know, you know, what Shema is, they don't know what Shabbos is, they don't believe in God, where it's considered totally normal and acceptable for the first time in perhaps in all of Jewish history, where, is for a Jew to marry a non-Jew is not considered a tragedy in any way. It's considered just one acceptable options among many. So that, of course, has tremendous ramifications for Jewish continuity, for Jewish identity, for people maintaining just their awareness and their understanding of themselves as Jews. And that's a very, very serious situation, which, of course, is a big question, what to do about that.
So Eisha HaTorah, one of its main aim, I would guess, is education, bringing people to understand what Judaism is about, much more from not really from a religious point of view, but what it is to be a Jew.
Correct. What it means to be Jew. And really the question is even a broader question than what it means to be a Jew. It's the question of what is life? What are we doing here? You know, what is the world about? And how does my identity as a Jew fit into that? I was born a Jew. So what? You know, so how does that, what does it mean? And how does that, how do I look at life? Is there a meaning to being here? So these are all questions which are really human questions and not just Jewish questions. And of course, you know, to the extent that someone doesn't think that, Judaism or their Jewish religion, their Jewish background, their Jewish identity has any answers to those questions or in any way, enhances their lives, so then they're not going to be interested. So our approach is to try and present to people that, you know, it isn't, you mentioned my video about how to put a mezuzah. So there's people who don't want to put a mezuzah. You know, Judaism doesn't just have something to say about how to put up a mezuzah, but it has something about how to be happy, how to have a happy marriage, how to successfully raise children, how to be, what does it mean to be a successful human being? These are all things that people care about. And, you know, and Judaism has very deep and very meaningful and very powerful answers to all of the questions that we care about the most.
So the background to the Hebrew Order of David going back to 1904 was there was a very real reason why we wanted to keep the Hebrew, or we insisted on keeping a Jewish fraternity, which is all men, and that we insisted on, it was stood firmly against anti-Semitism and assimilation because of this very fact that people came to this country, they had nothing, they knew nobody, and the chances of meeting Jews was difficult, so we became a meeting place for Jews to be able to connect and intermingle and become part of the Jewish, what was a very young Jewish community in South Africa. And so as from that point of view, but it was real. But yeah, in South Africa today, and it's gone around the world, America's probably the worst situation. But in South Africa, it's also become a massive problem for the Jewish community, and the numbers that are dwindling, they're the vanishing Jew, as Dershowitz says, is really real.
So, you know, the fact is that the Jewish people, according to statistics, comprise, you know, a maximum of 2% of the population of the planet. And in many countries, far less than that. I mean, what are there, 50 million South Africans, and how many of them are Jewish? And no one knows exactly the statistics, but are there more than 50 million South Africans? How many people in South Africa?
I think we're a little over 50 now.
A little over 50. And, I think it would be very, very optimistic to say there's 100,000 Jews in the country. It's probably less than that. So that's quite a small percentage. So a Jew today finds himself in a situation where certainly if they don't go to a Jewish school, but even if they do go to a Jewish school, once they leave school, they go to a university environment. They go to get their first job. You know, they go out, they have a social life. Is that the overwhelming majority of people that they meet, especially once they leave a Jewish school environment, are not Jews. So it is natural, you know, the Rambam, you quoted Pogo, I can quote the Rambam. The Rambam says something which is really common sense, is that explains that people are very influenced by their environment. And people who are spending time with non-Jews and their friends are non-Jewish, so it makes sense that they feel comfortable, that they identify, you know, there's common interest in the same music and the same programs and the same, and so it's only natural. I mean, even if someone wants to meet a Jew, have Jewish friends and to meet a nice Jewish, a girlfriend or a boyfriend, is not easy necessarily to meet them. So what is a person supposed to do in a world where the overwhelming majority of people they're going to encounter are not Jewish? So that what happens is assimilation. And because you're swimming upstream. And if you're going to swim upstream, then you have to have it's hard swimming upstream. I mean, the easiest thing to do is always just to go with the flow. And going with the flow is always, almost always ends up in and assimilating. So,
but is the shore within sight, or is it? Are we going backwards?
We're going. Oh, sorry.
Is the shoreline in sight? We're swimming upstream, but do we? Are we seeing the shore, or are we slipping backwards in the stream?
Look, I think you know, in America, where statistics are much more available in terms of the Jewish community there than they are in South Africa, is they're not encouraging. You know, and the most recent survey that they did of American Jewry basically indicated that if you remove the Orthodox from the statistics, the intermarriage rate is 70%, which is quite a shockingly high percentile. But so there's a researcher at Hebrew University whose name is Dr. Peter Medding, and he studied what keeps Jewish families Jewish from generation to generation. And he basically came to the conclusion that there's one key to being able to do that. And he said that is giving children an unambiguous Jewish identity. And, you know, and there has to be a real reason to swim against the stream. There has to be a real reason when most of the girls you meet are not Jewish, to hang on and make an effort to meet a Jewish girl. Or there has to be a real reason to remain connected to your identity when you're surrounded by, a society where that identity is very much in the minority. And so that means you have to have a Jewish identity, and that Jewish identity, has been proven again and again and just by history. Is that you can try and replace it with lots of things. You can try and make the Jewish identity about, simply it can be about tradition. It can be about, being Zionistic. It can be about, Kichel and Herring. It can be about a lot of things. But really, the only long-lasting Jewish identity which gets passed on successfully from generation to generation is one which is connected to our spiritual life, to Jewish values, Jewish spirituality, Jewish understanding of life as an opportunity to connect to the source. Once you are in some way, in some level, connected to that, understand and are committed to the importance of that, then you have a reason why it's worth the effort. You know, it's worth the effort to meet someone Jewish. It's worth the effort to go out and, you know, if someone's keeping kosher, so I'm not going to eat here. I'll just sit with my friends, or that's a hard thing to do for someone. But if you're committed and you understand why, it's the education, as you mentioned. The education is really the key as to what it means to be a Jew and why it's important to hang on to that.
So we as an organization, what do we do to maintain that? Besides the fact that our rules say, and it's our policy that if you're married out of the faith, then you're married to a non-Jew, that you can't be a member. What do we do? We're not proselytizing. We're not bringing people, trying to look for people, converts, guys going out there finding girls and changing them to become Jews. That's not our intention. If a person meets somebody and he wants to join the order and it's important enough to him, we would encourage him to get his wife or his girlfriend or whatever it is to convert. But that's not our intention, and that's not the way we think. Our thinking is that we as an organization, we want to attract Jews to this organization. We want to hold that situation pristine. And the argument that we have, because it is an argument in some places where, like San Diego, for example, where affiliation is so bad that if you consider an affiliate of Judaism, if you buy the Jewish newspaper. Hmm. So as an organization, how do we fight against that? How do we convince people? People don't want to join the organization, even if they are married to Jews, because they understand that their families may marry out and they don't join the organization. Others are members and they want to bring in family or friends who they think are decent people and nice people, and they probably are, but they're not married in the faith. So it's a stalemate. It's a Mexican standoff or Jewish standoff. So as far as we are concerned, we want to hold that line. We need the encouragement, we think, from everyone. We think we're on the right track, and it's been for 115 years we've stood by that premise and that policy, and that's where we really are at the moment. We're going to take a break for a few minutes to pay the rent, and then we'll come back.
Stay relevant and up to date. Keep informed. This is 101.9 High FM.
Joining us from Atlanta in the United States, we have David Joss. We're going to be online with him in a few minutes. We still have Rabbi Gedalia Kaufman in the studio and Ian Ralph, and we're discussing assimilation. And more to add, Rabbi?
Yeah, I think that as we were talking about before, is that the, you know, when people make decisions, is they make decisions based on what's in it for them, right? People want to be happy. So it's a very difficult thing, you know, it's very important to understand. You know, let's raise a different question here, maybe. Is that if someone, let's say someone wants to marry a Jew. Let's say someone is committed to their Jewish identity and they want to marry a Jew. There are many people, specifically, you know, I know for a fact I come from America originally, and I know certainly in America, many, even if a Jew in America feels like they are committed to marrying another Jew, is they're hesitant to say so because there's a sense that it's racist. So let's raise maybe what might be a little bit of a sensitive question. Is it racist if a Jew wants to marry another Jew?
Well, probably it is, because we want to keep within our within our race. So we're punting the Jewish race.
I heard an interesting story. I'm not sure it's a true story, but it's an interesting story nonetheless, which is that there was one of the corporates. There was a young woman working there, and a new gentleman joined the staff. And she found him quite attractive, was interested in possibly going out with him, and so she got a friend to go speak to him, and the friend went to speak to him and said, "Hey, do you think you'd be interested in maybe going out with this girl?" And he said, "I'm not so interested, thank you." But she's such a nice girl. So it happened to be, I didn't mention, is that so this woman was a white woman, and the man was a black man, and he said, "I'm sorry, I only date black women. I don't date white women." So when word of this got out, there was an uproar in the office about this man being racist and about, you know, refusing to go out with white people. And eventually, when it sort of got back to him, what a fear he'd caused. So he went back to this woman and he said, "Look, let me explain something to you." He said, I'm a Zulu, and my Zulu culture, traditions, way of life is very, very important to me. I'm committed to that. I'm committed. My people matter to me, my culture, my traditions, my society. And I want to marry a woman who shares that with me, who shares those values, who shares those principles. And therefore, it's nothing against, you know, her personally. It's that I want to build a life together with someone who shares my values. And so that's why I think that this is not a statement in any way about, you know, of course, there's plenty of wonderful, wonderful, you know, non-Jewish people out there. And and it isn't a statement about there being, you know, that the reason why a Jew would want to marry another Jew has anything to do with, well, we don't, you know, there's a problem. No. It's that any marriage to succeed, for it to succeed, is that it's got to be that there's I work with a lot of, I work in the community with, you know, yes, quite absolutely. Often with marital issues. And the greatest way to maximize your success the chance of success in marriage is that you have as much in common as possible. Okay, you have as much as that you share. You have to share a vision. You have to share goals. You have to share values. And so, a person who that is important to them, who has imported them to have a Jewish family, Jewish values, Jewish way of life, Jewish sensitivities are important to them, is then of course you want someone who shares those, because how can you build a life with someone who doesn't? But then the question becomes, is that unfortunately there's more and more people today who, what if they say, well, that's not important to me?
No, absolutely. We've been joined on the line by David Joss from Atlanta, United States. David, welcome.
Hi, Stan. Can you hear me okay?
Loud and clear.
Great.
So joined in, I think you know, in the studio is Rabbi Kaufman and also Ian Ralph is with us.
Hi, David.
Hi, how are you all doing?
Wonderful, thanks. David, I think you know we're talking about assimilation, and asked Rabbi Kaufman to come in and discuss assimilation. He comes from Aisha Torah, which is, that's one of the work in progress. And it's quite an interesting discussion about things ranging from racism, from Jewish values, reasons. And just give us a point of view, if you don't mind, for a moment about the American situation, because I mean that's been a situation which we've been dealing with for quite some time now.
Sure. So thank you for having me on. This is really an honor talking to you from Atlanta.
It's an honor for us.
As you know, I'm from South Africa originally. I left in 1978 and I'm very involved with the Hebrew Order of David here in America. And obviously we're very concerned about assimilation. I heard what the rabbi said earlier about the large number of American Jews that are marrying out of the faith, and that is a huge concern. They, as he said, feel very comfortable in the American culture. They're very accepted. They're very successful here. And unfortunately, it is very easy, therefore, to integrate and marry out of the faith. So I think that what we're trying to do is get to the children at a young age to be involved in Jewish schools, Jewish activities, Jewish culture. And this is not just from the religious aspect, but from activities that are Jewish. And through the Lodge and through the Jewish Federation of Atlanta, there are a number of activities that are designed to be Jewish as such. They're somewhat secular, but they're very Jewish. We have a Jewish film festival. We have a Jewish book festival, a Jewish music festival. And the HOD puts on a kosher Jewish barbecue competition and festival. So we're trying to reach out to the many Jews who are proud to say they're Jewish, but they are not affiliated with religious organizations.
Right. So just recently we had some issues in San Diego, and we've had that discussion around the fact that we have some pressure from people wanting to join the organization, or members within the organization wanting others to join who are married out of the faith. And how are you dealing with that?
Well, you're correct. It's becoming a bigger problem here, because as the members of HOD in America grow and they want to bring in other members, they find out that a lot of their friends have married out of the faith, and our policy is not to allow them to be a part of HOD if they're married out of the faith. So we are staying with our policy, though, because, as you know, HOD's foundation is to be against assimilation, anti-Semitism, injustice, oppression. But assimilation is one of our foundation stones. So we're saying, you know, HOD is therefore not for everybody. It's for people who identify with being Jewish and want to remain Jewish. Because once they marry out of the faith, the statistics show that their children are very unlikely to remain Jewish.
Right, and so that's a succession problem as well.
Yes, absolutely.
Rabbi, I suppose we can talk the whole night about this and we still won't have a conclusion. The fact is, from the Hebrew Order of David point of view, we're holding the line. It's not our intention in any way whatsoever to change. I have to just say that over the years we have watered down the requirement, in that at a point in the Hebrew Order of David's history, you couldn't be a member unless you were an Orthodox Jew. And so now we are saying we are accepting Jews for Jews as they are, the situation being what it is. I mean, we understand that, you know, Reformed children are not taken as Jewish, et cetera, et cetera, but that's not for us to really pass judgment on. From our point of view, we accept that a person married to a Jewess can be a member of the organization, and hopefully that will abide and carry on for the period of the Hebrew Order of David. We've been around 115 years, and we're growing in America, which is possibly our salvation, and we are going to be going for another 115 years plus. So, Rabbi, I want to thank you for coming in, unless you have something else to add to the...
Maybe I'll just end
please,
with one...
wrap up, whichever way you want.
Just in case there's anyone listening out there who maybe thinks of themselves, but you know what? I hear everything that they're saying, but, you know, I don't think it's such a problem. There are many people who don't think it's a problem. So what if Jews disappear? You know, what if I don't want to be a Jew anymore? So let me just end with if someone maybe is thinking along those lines, let me think. Let me mention the following. There was a young man whose grandmother passed away at a very, very old age. His parents were no longer around, and so he was left. It came to him to settle her affairs. And he ended up, you know, putting quite a lot of time into cleaning out her house. And in the garage, there was tons and tons of stuff to go through, papers and all kinds of trinkets and things. And he came across a whole bunch of things that were, he could sort of, I guess, describe as sort of old Judaica items, you know, very, very sort of worn out, old, tarnished looking things, you know, candlesticks and menorahs and all kinds of things. And a friend of his said, well, you know, why don't you get them appraised? And he said, you know what? I just want to get this over with. I want to get rid of all the junk. So he took everything to the bin and just threw everything out. A few weeks later, he sees on the television, he's watching the news, and he sees a story about an incredible auction. Sotheby's does an auction, and they say that this young garbage picker became fabulously wealthy because he found these things in the dump and he took them in, and it turned out that these things were actually unbelievably valuable, almost priceless. And he realizes these are his grandmother's things that he threw away. So, you know, it's a very big mistake.
To
take the things you get from your grandparents and throw them away without checking how valuable they are. So the metaphor, I think, is clear. It's that, you know, is we have a lot of ideas that we formulate when we're younger about what Judaism is, about what it means to be Jewish, or what Jewish identity, about what Torah is. And they're not necessarily accurate. We have all kinds of things we formed when we were young. And a person as an adult, or as an older teenager, you know, you're making a big decision to throw that all away, to take 3,300 years of Jewish history, of Jewish identity, okay? I'm very against used to be in previous generations that, you know, the guilt approach, you know, is that, sure. You know, Hitler didn't finish the job and now you want to finish it off. There's no one stays Jewish because of that. As I was saying, you stay Jewish because you realize how amazing it is, how awesome it is, how powerful, how much happiness, how much meaning it can bring to your life. So anyone out there who thinks, I'm just going to throw away, it doesn't matter, as I would say, before you throw it away, before you do something which can't be changed, is that take a real look and have it appraised to get a sense of really how valuable it is.
So Rabbi, you're very insightful. From an organization of the Hebrew of David's point of view, we want to work closely with you, and we're very fortunate that in America Chabad has hosted a lot of our lodges there, and without that I don't think we would be operational, and they've certainly given us a leg up. Aish, seen at the Kotel, I've looked up and I've seen your offices. Very interesting way of doing things, a very interesting take on life. And it's been an absolute pleasure having you come on the show. And we're going to invite you back. And we, as far as the Hebrew Order of David is concerned, we'd like to work closely with you in some way. And I think it's important that this point of view is put forward. And thank you very much for your presence.
Thanks for having me, Stan. I appreciate it.
Thank you. You're welcome to stay and listen if you want to chip in at any of the other conversations.
Thank you.
David.
Yes.
So I asked you to come on here because we need to talk about the Hebrew Order of David in America. In South Africa, people know about the Hebrew Order of David or whatever kind of impression they have of that. But they... people are not very well versed in the fact that we have expanded into America, that unfortunately, from South African point of view, America is growing at a pace. And it's like a family. The parents get older, so we in South Africa are the parents of this organization. But the children are coming up, and you're going to have to look after us, the parents, here, because from the rest of the world's point of view, the hope is in America, and you know, we in South Africa, we've got a dwindling population as such, and we holding our own quite successfully, but we look to you for the growth. So give us some background about your connection. Let me just say that David Joss is a worthy brother of the Hebrew Order of David. He holds the Order of Merit, which is a prestigious award for his accomplishments within the order. He's the past Governing Lodge President of the North American Hebrew Order of David, and he sits on the Grand Executive as a executive member, you know, monitoring and working together with the work of the Hebrew Order of David on a global, international stage. David, give us something about America.
Sure. Let me give you just a brief background, and then I'll talk a little bit more about what's going on here. I was very familiar with the Hebrew Order of David growing up, as my father was a member in South Africa, in Pretoria, and came to America, and about 20 years ago, a good friend of mine, worthy brother Les Kreitzik, who had been president of a lodge in South Africa, approached me and some other South Africans about starting a Hebrew Order of David in the United States here in Atlanta. And along with our good friend, worthy brother Alan Rubenstein, who's now the grand president of the Hebrew Order of David, also lives in Atlanta, we got together and got this thing going, and it's been incredibly fulfilling, and we really feel privileged to have been able to get this going in America, where there are so many opportunities to open lodges and a large population of Jews. You were talking about how many Jews there are in South Africa, which has dwindled some. But in America now, there are like almost six and a half million Jews. So there's tremendous, opportunity for us.
Most cities in America have more Jews in those cities than we have in the whole of South Africa. So that's a statistic.
Right. I think there's about 140,000 Jews in Atlanta. So that's more than I think there ever were in the whole of South Africa.
Correct.
So as we got this going in Atlanta, it was mostly South Africans, but then we soon found out that the Americans really liked the idea of fraternity. Many of them had been members of Jewish male fraternities at their universities, and they were intrigued by the idea and started to join the lodge. So we grew tremendously, and when the lodge gets too big, it's not very easy to manage. So we expanded into more lodges, and eventually in Atlanta now there's 4 lodges in different parts of the city. And then we spread to Boca Raton in Florida, Toronto in Canada, and then more recently Dallas and Houston in Texas opened lodges, and then the most recent lodge in San Diego. And there are opportunities for other lodges in other parts of the country, the key being that there are South Africans all over the country who are familiar with HOD and who help us get it started. But once we get it started, it's wonderful that we can get many others, Americans, and America's a melting pot. So we've got Israeli members, we've got members from Argentina, we've got members from all over the world that are members of our lodge who are now all in America.
No Mexicans yet.
Not quite, no. But it's been very rewarding. As I mentioned, it's a brotherhood, it's a fraternity. We help the communities that we're in. We raise funds for charity. We have social events, and it's really spread very nicely. And we're really enjoying doing this, and hoping that we can continue to grow the lodge in the United States.
And if obviously, from a growth point of view, you've attracted proper American citizens, and when I say proper, I mean American citizens who've grown up in America. Some of the lodges there are almost entirely American citizens, that grew up in America, that we have nothing to do with South Africa.
Absolutely. And we've also had lodges open, like in Dallas, where none of the people starting the lodge had ever been a member of the HOD.
Yes.
So there is opportunity to do this, and we're very excited about it. It is amazing how similar we all are, whether we're in South Africa or London or Israel or America. We're a brotherhood. We're all from a common ancestry, and we all want to do things that help not just the Jewish community, but mainly the Jewish community in Israel. So we've had a number of different fundraisers here, ranging from raising money for an Orthodox Jewish girls' high school to raising funds for research for Jewish genetic diseases, promotion of science, technology, engineering, and math in Jewish schools by building laboratories, and even getting involved in worldwide projects like the Zichron Menachem Project in Israel that was started in the UK, and eventually we also got involved with. So there's just been a tremendous amount of activity and a lot of satisfaction from the good we've been able to do. More recently, we've had an event here, the Kosher Barbecue Festival, which has been a lot of fun. It's a competition cooking kosher barbecue brisket, and with over 20 teams competing, with over 3,500 attendees this year. It's just a phenomenal event, mostly attended by Jews, but also by a lot of non-Jews. And the team that actually won the competition this year was the Sandy Springs Police Department team. So that's a lot of satisfaction that we're getting a lot of goodwill towards the Jewish community and raising money for charity. In this particular case, the charity was the Jewish Educational Loan Fund that makes interest-free loans to Jewish students.
So for those people in South Africa who aren't familiar with the word barbecue, it's somewhere a braai.
Braaivleis, exactly.
So I also have in the studio Ian Ralph. He's the Governing Lodge President of South Africa. Just before that, I just want to mention that I don't know if you did mention Canada. We have a lodge in Toronto, and that
Absolutely.
Also forms part of the North American contingent. I just want to give a bit of a background to the structure. So years ago, the Grand President and the Grand Executive was a purely South African situation. We then started a new initiative because of the emigration starting lodges overseas. At that stage, we had one lodge in Atlanta. We had two or three in America, in London. We had lodges in Israel, which had been started a little before that. But we restructured the Hebrew Order of David, and now it's an international organization. The Grand Executive comprises representation from America, from Canada, from Israel, from South Africa, and from the United Kingdom. The Grand Presidency is on a rotational basis, and last year it was from the Grand President was Michael Margolis from the United Kingdom. This year, for the next 2 years, during this 2 year period, it's worthy brother Alan Rubenstein from America, and the Grand President designate is coming from South Africa, and the next rotation, that's worthy brother Avron Krasner, a Johannesburg fellow, and a Johannesburg brother, actually. We called each other brother, although we come from a different mother. So as I'm just going to bring in Ian just to say a few words, but as a background, Ian is the Governing Lodge President of South Africa, serves on the Grand Executive also because of his situation. And he was a past principal, a past president of the lodge, Dr. Herzl Lodge, which was the number one lodge formed 115 years ago in Johannesburg. Ian, welcome.
Stan, thank you. And thank you, Rabbi, your inspiring words. We currently got 8 lodges across South Africa, 4 Johannesburg, Johannesburg, Cape Town, Durban, Port Elizabeth in East London. Most of the lodge are going strong. We're always looking for new members. Any Jewish male, welcome. Provided your wife is Jewish or you intend to marry a Jewish lady. I do come from a Masonic background. A lot of Jewish guys in Masonry. There's a lot of organizations outside the Hebrew Order of David, obviously, that people can belong to. But the HOD for me, the Hebrew Order of David, is my home. It's a fantastic Jewish fraternity. The Chavishah is phenomenal. We are international. I've been to United States, actually stayed in David's house last year. Wonderful hospitality. Thank you very much, David. And hope to be coming
pleasure.
Again next year. And we'll be seeing you in Johannesburg next year, please God.
Yeah, we have our biannual conference every 2 years. It's South Africa's turn in March, end of February next year in South Africa. We'll be holding a conference. Okay, I'm going to move on to some other things. David, stay on the line. We'll want to just bring some points to your attention. Rabbi, you talked about this guy that emptied his garage and somebody else got rich on that. So the Hebrew Order of David has an archive. We have an extensive archive. We have a database going back 100 years of members. We get calls constantly from people around the world for information about their families. We're looking for anything you may have before you throw it out and make somebody else rich. There are Kiddush cups. There are medals. There's all sorts of memorabilia that belong to the Hebrew Order of David. We're given to people on various occasions, maybe in your families, you have such items, and we'll give you recognition in our library, which you was in our refurbishing, and we'd like to have that in our possession if you don't want to have it yourselves. I know some people have Kiddush cups and things which they're still using, their families or grandparents or whatever it was, got married, they were given a, given that type of thing, like a kiddush cup or candlesticks, and so on.
Also, a lot of regalia out there.
Yes.
That's also more than welcome in our museum.
Right. We also just have two other organizations which we've given our home to. One is the Jewish Genealogical Society of South Africa. They share, they have resources at the center. They have meetings at the HAD Center here in Johannesburg. And they are part of our organization in the sense that it's kind of a sister organization. We help them, we assist them with marketing, and they have meetings. The Yiddish Society of South Africa also has a home there. They have resources there, and they use certain books and so on are at the center, and we're going to increase that situation as we go along. I'm going to give you some information about events and activities that are coming along in the next couple of months. So last month we announced, last week we announced the project A Day in the Life of a Jew in South Africa, which we've put, we're asking for you to take photographs, send us a picture with some blurb, and we'll see the best of them. We're going to have a panel of judges. There's 25,000 rand in prize money going for the begging. We hope to put a book together if things go right. It's a little bit late in the year, but we, from next week, we'll announce, hopefully people will start sending things in. If you want to send in anything, you can find the center at 011-640-3017, or you can send an email to admin@hrdavid.org, and information, pictures, whatever you want to send. We will be putting up a email address, which will be photos@hrdavid.org, but it will be a day or two before that's operational. On the 19th of February, we have as a guest speaker Dr. Rolf Meyer. If you remember, during the period of the end of democracy, working with Cyril Ramaphosa, the president, he's now going to talk at the HRD Center for a to raise money for charity for the Dr. Herzl Lodge. And it's the topic is 25 years into democracy. The fee is 80 rand per person, and we welcome anybody from the public who'd like to attend. From point of view of older people, seniors, we have a project which has been ongoing for many years called The Royals, and that is a morning we have at the HRD Center where we have music and some, we give people a tea and snacks, which we are fortunate to have donated. And that takes place, the first one, there's three that's going to be this year, the 16th of May, the 15th of August, and the 14th of November. And we'll, if anybody wants to get in touch or they'd like to attend, haven't attended before, please contact 011-640-3017. On the 29th of August, we're going to hold a memorial meeting for members of the Hebrew Order of David who've passed. We'd like to contact, we do have an extensive list of widows and families of these people who have passed and past members of the Hebrew Order of David. If they would like to attend, also should contact that 011-640-3017. We started a project last year, a wish list of items, any organization or persons needing something that they need for their lives or assisting them in their lives or in an organization might mean something specific. If you would contact the number, either send an email to admin@hrdavid.org or the phone number that I've given you, and we'll try and see if we can match up with some items as far as that's concerned. And I think, you know, we have some resources. We'll try and assist wherever we can, as wherever possible. Ian, anything more to say about the order in Johannesburg, South Africa?
Stan, I think time is running out, and I think you've summed it up. Thank you for inviting me onto your show, onto our show, and I'm looking forward to listening to you next week.
Thank you. Rabbi, it's 3 days till Tu B'Shvat. What does that mean to us?
I think that means that it's a time to, it's interesting because Tu B'Shvat is in Israel, is a time when, I mean, spring's on the way. So
yes.
South Africa are a little bit, backwards from that, but nevertheless, I think it's always an opportunity to think about the renewal and rejuvenation and recommitment.
absolutely. Just one interesting point, that the Hebrew Order of David in 1904 started, and of course we were home for immigrants to this country. They needed assistance with all sorts of things, starting from at least a square meal once a week and something to, if they were sick, they could go to a doctor, and of course they could get assistance. But in 1955, the Medical Schemes Act came into being in South Africa, and that changed everything, and we had to change at that point. It was a seminal moment in the Hebrew Order of David when we had to change from being a organization, because obviously we couldn't fulfill the role of a medical scheme, and we became much more altruistic and charity-based, and that's why we are what we are today. And the Hebrew Order of David works within its communities around the world, from America, South Africa, etc., doing work within the community where they have a lodge. So a lodge is essentially a branch, active members doing work within their community. David, anything to add to what we've discussed?
Well, I really enjoyed the discussion, and thank you for having me on the program. And I just want to echo what the rabbi said about how valuable it is and what a privilege it is to be Jewish and to have this culture and history. And it's something we should all hold on to and encourage our children to be involved with going forward.
Right, absolutely. I mean, that is really what we're about. Being a member of the Hebrew of David, most of us are members for many, many years. I think we do good work. I think from an organization point of view, we've structured the Hebrew of David for growth around the world. We want to grow it, and we're looking for people who want to assist us in growing it. Rabbi, do you want to give a punt for the Aish and contact numbers if anybody wants to come to your wonderful organization, spend Shabbos there?
Certainly. Is that we have a number of very exciting programs, trips, classes available.
Free, or do you have to pay?
As well.
I mean...
Depends on what. You certainly, to come to a class, you don't have to pay. To go on a trip, there are charges. We do have trips that are highly subsidized for students, university students, and young professionals. We just had a trip to India, very successful trip to India that just came back a few weeks ago. So there's a lot of exciting things going on. Our number is, and the office is 011-485-2985. Certainly welcome to call. We also have a website. Go to aish.co.org.za. Certainly to come with the shul, and we encourage people to get involved. We encourage people to come find out what's happening.
A very welcoming kind of organization, Eshat Torah. The Rabbonim are wonderful people, do great work in the community. Their offices are here in George Avenue, and they're set up. They're growing in that area, so it's an organization. A lot of respect to you and for the work that you do. And thank you really for being on the show with us.
Thank you.